theme. Before we get into today's episode, I'm just interrupting quickly to let you know that our hats have finally arrived. So we officially have our Stronger Stride custom fractal hats, and there are a couple left. I think we have about 10 left. So if you're interested and you haven't seen on the social media yet, they are available. I'll have a link below to the Google form where you can fill out your details and we will send them to you, or you can pick them up from a couple of locations. Enjoy the episode. Thanks so much, and we will talk to you next week. All right, here we are. Welcome to the Stronger Stride podcast, episode number 134, I believe. Thank you so much for being here. It is very exciting to have you. Today, we're going to be talking all about Tararira Ultra Trail 50K. What went down, highs and lows, my thoughts, opinions, feelings, some things that happened along the way, some things that went wrong, some things that went right, how I've recovered since the event, how my body's pulled up, any injuries that have happened, and what is coming up next. So if any of that is of interest to you, stick around. If it's not of interest to you, then we'll see you later. See you next week. But if you're new to the ultra scene, or you're thinking about getting into ultras, or you're just not sure about how it all works or the things that happen within it, then this episode is for you. Or if you're just curious to know how I went, then stick around. So, kicking things off, Tararira Ultra Trail. Now, this is one of the UTMB events, which is basically a big company, big organization. UTMB has a number of different races around the world. We have one here in the Blue Mountains called UTA, Ultra Trail Australia. And New Zealand had the first one of the year in Tararira. Now, I am pronouncing that incorrectly, but I'm not very good at rolling my R's, so I can't quite get it right, so you'll have to forgive me for that. Now, I signed up for this event maybe middle of last year, I guess I want to say. And it was basically going to be my first ultra back for a while. So I did, if you've been listening for a while, you would have known that in 2022, I did a couple of ultra marathons. I did a couple of ultras. I did Bondi to Manly. And then I kind of got put off from doing the longer stuff for a while, had a few injuries from it, and just wasn't in the headspace to tackle something that big again. So 2023 was the year of rehab, recovery, sorting myself out, and then slowly getting back into some shorter races. I did some 30Ks, some half marathons, I did Sydney Marathon, that kind of stuff. And then this year I wanted to revisit the ultra, see if I still loved it, see if I'd improved, see what had changed, and yeah, just give it a go. And I thought this would be a fantastic opportunity to do so, because it was in a beautiful place, in a new country. It was an excuse to have a holiday, an excuse to explore new places. And I knew that New Zealand is just an amazing place to trail run, and the forests there are beautiful. And yeah, I just thought of all the places, this seems to be a great option. And from what I'd heard from people who'd been there before, or they knew someone who had, it seemed as though this event was relatively runnable in a trail running sense. So I guess the key difference between trail runs and road runs is the elevation and the terrain is so variable, and that makes the event so much more challenging depending on which aspect of that is increased. So for something like UTA in the Blue Mountains, there's a lot of stairs, a lot of climbing, a lot of elevation, and that is kind of the key thing that makes that event really difficult. So for Tararira, there was much less of that. So I think on the website it said there was about 1400 meters of elevation across the 50Ks, whereas in UTA it's about 2500 for the same distance. So that puts things into perspective. So I thought, okay, it's not going to be the worst, hardest ultra. They advertise it as a really good one for a beginner ultra runner, for someone who doesn't want something super extreme. That's me. I wanted something that I could finish and I could achieve and I could feel satisfied by. I didn't want something to break me. I didn't want to do something crazy. You know, some people really are drawn to the hard stuff. They want the challenge. They want the hardest option. They want it to be rugged and in the middle of the night and to have no support from the outside world. And they want all the elevation. Like, some people, that is their thing that gets them going. For me, not so much. I want to run somewhere really pretty and beautiful and enjoy the trails. And I love runnable trails that you can kind of just get into the flow and just groove and just run along without having to have this like crisis of wondering whether you can make it. That's what I wanted. So this seemed appropriate for that. And it was great. So If you want to know more about the training, you can listen to last week's episode with Tim Locke. He was my coach from the Distance Collective. I'll link him below if you want to find out more about his coaching and programming. I'm not going to talk about that today because we went into some detail last time. I'm talking more about the race itself today. But basically, in summary, training went really well. Loved training. I felt really good. I felt like I was in a great routine. I felt coming into my taper that I was in a really good position. I felt fit and strong, and my long runs had been going pretty well, so that was really good. Then I had taper, and as usual, had a few doubts in that period. Wasn't sure whether I could do it. Had I forgotten how to run? You know, all those feelings came up, which I'm sure you've experienced if you've gone through a taper and you really reduce the volume that you're running. You're not doing those massive long runs anymore, so you can kind of start to think that, yeah, maybe you're not as capable as you thought you were a few weeks ago. So definitely had some of those moments. And then we got into race week, got to the expo, picked up the bib and the shirt and got a few socks from Features, and yeah, was pretty much ready to go from there. So the day before, I had a phone call with Tim just to talk about, I guess, some expectations, some things to think about and things to consider on the day itself, which was really, really helpful because there are a few key messages that I definitely repeated to myself throughout the run that we spoke about on that phone call, and that really kind of put me in a good frame of mind going into the event. So also on that night before, had some pasta as usual, got my bib onto my t-shirt, got everything laid out and ready to go, and then the morning of the race was upon us. So the race kicked off at 6 a.m, which I think was a fantastic time. I think any earlier makes it a little bit tricky to get your food in, and you're obviously missing out on a little bit of sleep. And any later, obviously things start to get a bit warmer by then. Keeping in mind that this is summer in New Zealand, and while it's not as hot as Australia, it still does get pretty warm. So 6 a.m. was kickoff. I was staying in like a campground about a kilometer, maybe not even 500 meters from the start. So that was super helpful. Logistically, that just made things so easy. We could just walk to the start. Didn't have to worry about shuttle buses or driving and finding a park or getting public transport or anything like that. Was just super convenient and easy. So the first thing I thought when I stepped outside was it was warmer than I expected. I think something that I had felt while traveling around New Zealand for the week prior was that, yeah, it got really hot and sunny and warm during the middle of the day, and particularly towards kind of 2 or 3 in the afternoon, it felt really hot and summery. But I thought in that week that the mornings were a lot cooler. I felt like I could have worn a jumper in the evenings and it felt a bit fresh when you woke up, which maybe was just a contrast to Australia. But that morning of the event itself, I stepped outside and was like, oh, it's actually not cold. Like, it wasn't hot by any means, but it didn't have that, you know, often for a race, it's that kind of like, you're a bit shaky, you're like, you've got all your layers on and you don't want to take them off because it's so cold. And that's kind of a nice way to start the race because at least you're starting off cool. But this definitely didn't have that feeling. So that was my first kind of observation. Anyway, walked over to the start line and I was trying to find everyone because there were heaps of people I knew doing the event, but it was dark, so I couldn't actually see anyone. There was a few random lights around, but you really couldn't see anything. So there were a lot of people with headlamps. Now, this was probably the first error I made. I walked over and thought, oh, everyone's got their headlamps on. Like, that's so funny that they've brought their headlamps just to wear before the race. Like, that seems like a bit of a hassle, or maybe they're giving it to someone who's not running and they're just using it while they hang around. And then I was speaking to someone, they said, oh, where's your headlamp? It's like, oh, I didn't bring a headlamp. Like, it's summer and we're starting at 6. I just kind of figured the sun would be up any moment now. But apparently they'd advised in an email that it would be recommended to wear a headlamp at the start of the event, seeing as first light, I believe, not sunrise, but first light happened at 6:15. So I thought, well, that's a bit inconvenient, but hopefully there's just enough people that they've all got their headlamps. I'm just going to be a bit of a stinge and steal the light from everyone else. Just soak up the light, you know, be a part of the atmosphere, stay close to everyone, take in all their light. So I wasn't too worried about that at all, but I just thought, oh, that's a bit silly on my behalf. To be honest, I don't think I would have changed anything. Like, it was really only the first, 10 or 15 minutes that it would have been helpful. But because you start in a group, that wasn't really an issue for me. Anyway, so found a couple of people, which was nice. And then headed over to the start line. So they had three waves for the 50K. The A wave was sub 7 hours, and then B was 7 to 8 hours, and C was 8 hours plus. So I thought that was an interesting way to group the groups. I felt like the B wave is quite a narrow window. I feel like there would be quite a few people under 7 hours, particularly for this ultra, because I was looking at the results from the year before, and I'm sure the winners were getting kind of like 3 hours 30, 3 hours 40, around that kind of realm for first place. So I would have thought that the A group would have been a lot lower, maybe sub 6 or sub 5.5, and then that B group would have been a broader range, and then C would have been kind of the next group. But it seemed as though that A group was quite big. So I went in the A group. I was pretty confident I was going to be under 7 hours, and that group was massive. I mean, I don't know how big the other two were, but it just felt like quite a lot for the A group. But that was cool. Good energy, lots of light, which was very helpful for me. So yeah, made our way over to the start line. The only downer with the start line was you couldn't have friends and family there, and they didn't have any spectators kind of watching that initial first couple of kilometers, which is always quite nice to have that atmosphere at the start and, you know, to wave to your friends and family as you go past. But they weren't able to access that area, so that would be my only feedback with that. But we were lining up at the start, having kind of small talk with the people around us, and then I'm not sure who, I should have checked what his name was, but basically there was a guy on the microphone at the start and a lady, but this guy at the start, we had kind of maybe a minute to go, and he did this amazing motivational speech, and I've never heard anything like it at a start line. It felt like, if you go on YouTube and search for motivational speaker, it felt like really something you'd get from some sort of, yeah, motivational speech. And it made me teary. He was saying things like, you've worked so hard for this moment, you've sacrificed so much, your family have sacrificed so much, you all deserve to be here, but like just all these things. And I was like, yeah, you're right. Like, yeah, you're so right. I have done those things. And there was a Maori performance as well. I'm not sure if it was a haka or what the term was, but it was this incredible performance. And I always find watching Maori performances and hakas really powerful and really emotional. I feel like there's something about the volume and the power and the way that they move and their eyes and their facial features and or expressions, sorry, that's really powerful. And I found it like, oh my goodness, like I can feel this and the energy, and it just really pumped me up and motivated me and made me emotional. It was this real mixture of things. And basically this guy did this massive speech and it was amazing, and we were like all pumped up, ready to go, and he's counting down from 10, 9, 8, and he gets there, and then we're a couple seconds to go, everyone's got their watches ready, and this guy comes over and taps on the shoulder and says, hold on a second, like we need to sort out the timing mats. So basically we're all pumped up, ready to go, he'd done this speech, he's counting us down, we're about to cross the line, hit our start buttons, and then we had to wait a second for the starting mats to be sorted out, which of course we want the starting mats working, especially the people at the front who are going to win or be on the podium. They want that working so they can prove that they came the place they did. Anyway, so we're like, yeah, that's fine. We'll hang around for a second. And then like a minute goes by and the guy next to me is like, oh, that's a bit of a bummer. Like I was really hyped up and ready to go, and now I've kind of lost it. I sort of agreed. Like you kind of have this like peak motivation and then it just sort of drops off. And obviously he's not going to redo his speech again and they're not going to do the performance again. So we're just kind of hanging around waiting. And then by about 5 past, they were ready to go and they sent us off. So we started in the pitch black, but everyone had their headlamps on. So that was a really cool, like, train of light, going around. I'm not sure exactly, but kind of some thermal pools and things like that. So we were at this, the start was at kind of a resort which had thermal spas and hot springs and that kind of thing. So we're going around and it was misty and there was steam coming off the surface and it was dark, but then you had all the headlamps to follow. And it was a relatively narrow, windy start, which was kind of cool, but it meant that you were sort of just swept up in the pace of those around you. Like you couldn't really, you're not going to stop at the start, but sorry, you couldn't really adjust your pace because you were kind of just in this tunnel or this wave of people. So if you hadn't started yourself or seated yourself in an appropriate spot, that might have made things tricky. I felt like I was in a good position and I felt like my pace that I was at was comfortable. I think always you start a little bit too quick, but I'm not too worried about that for the first 1 or 2 Ks. I don't think that's make or break. It was kind of fun just being amongst it and just sort of following wherever we were going. I couldn't really see what was too far ahead, or I couldn't really see where we were going, but you're just sort of following the couple of people in front of you, which was really fun. And then, yeah, we came around and there were some spectators cheering, which was really nice. They had some funny signs and things like that. So that always gives you a bit of a boost at the start as well. So that was the first few Ks. Then we moved into the forest and it started getting light by this point. But because the forests there were so dense and there was so much coverage, I don't know what the term is. You know, you've got like your levels of the forest. You've got your floor and then the next part. There was a lot above, a lot of branches, a lot of leaves. So it was really dark. So even once the sun had come up, it was actually really dark in the forest. And that remained for quite a while, depending on where we were and how dense it was in that area. There were quite a few sections or moments where I really had to concentrate on the ground because it was a little bit hard to see without any extra light. So that is one to keep in mind. Anyway, going through the forest was just lovely. Like, just initially, just this really nice feeling. And although I said earlier that it was quite a warm morning, because the forest is so dense and there's kind of moisture on the ground, moisture in the air, it just had this really nice, cool feeling. It felt like you were really in the shade and there was this nice kind of breeze and you weren't exposed. And I don't know, it just felt, it felt like it contained a lot of cool air in the forest initially. That's kind of what I was feeling. So that was really nice. It felt like, okay, this might be a warm day, but maybe we won't really experience it too much because we're within the forest for quite a while. So that was great. We came out of there sort of six, maybe five or six Ks in, and just came out to a kind of fire trail, gravel road type thing. And again, the trees are amazing. So I was looking up at the trees and just being like, oh, I just love trees so much. They're just so amazing. And this is so cool and beautiful. And I can't believe I get to do this for the next 5 or 6 hours. And yeah, I was looking up, taking it all in. And then all of a sudden I was face down on the floor. So that was a bit of a bummer. I stacked it pretty well. Nothing like serious, no injuries or anything. But I had one of those falls where you trip and you feel yourself falling and you're like, no, it's okay, just catch it, and you're kind of like falling at that 45 degree angle for a while. It feels like forever, and then you finally just go down. So I had that, hands went out, the brim of my cap was grazed, which makes me think, if I didn't have the hat on, would I have hit my face on the floor, I guess. Maybe my hands would have just stopped me, I'm not quite sure, but that would have been a bit inconvenient. So my hands were a bit scratched up, my thighs and knees were a bit scratched up as well, which was fine, and I wasn't bleeding heaps or anything, so I didn't have to deal with like cleaning anything up or sorting anything out. But the only real annoying thing was, because I scratched my quad, middle of my thigh, every time when I was hiking, you know, sometimes you put your hands on your legs and kind of push off, almost like you're simulating using poles and you're helping yourself to get up. If I would do that, it would sting so much because my leg was cut and obviously like my hands were sweaty by that point later on in the race. So that was just a little bit annoying, a bit inconvenient, but nothing too serious. But it was funny because we were just in the most non-technical section, and I think that's why I was looking up, because I thought, oh, this is fine, like it's just gravel road, I'll be okay, I'll just look up now, because I wanted to really make a conscious effort to take in the scenery, because I knew that I could so easily just run this thing and then get to the end and be like, oh, I didn't even really look at anything. And I knew that I wasn't going to stop to take photos and videos and do it as like a touristy, you know, training run. Like, I was doing it to see what I could do. I was doing it to get the most out of myself. So I knew I wasn't going to be stopping to do those things. So I wanted to at least make sure I was looking around and taking it in with my eyes. So that's what I was doing in this moment, and then went down, and that usual thing of everyone asking if you're okay, which is lovely, but it's that thing of like, oh, just don't ask me because I don't want to talk about it, because I'm going to get annoyed and teary and just like, oh, just let's just move on. So I just sort of like put my thumb up and just said, yep, I'm all good, thank you. And the guy next to me said something like, at least you got it out of the way, like there's always going to be one. And I was like, yeah, that's a good way to look at it, like, a pretty good chance I was going to fall at some point today or trip, so at least I've ticked it off early. And he said that he fell over recently at a race, but it was in front of the cameraman, so you know, it could be worse. I was okay, and about 2 seconds after I fell, I got back up, and then someone behind me fell. So I don't know if whatever I tripped on was maybe a common issue area for a lot of people, but I did see quite a few falls on the day, and it was that kind of terrain where it was like, it's not so rugged and rough that you have to be like watching every step and being really careful, and it was really technical and crazy. Like, it just wasn't, but there were, because you're in a forest, there's tree roots and there were heaps of little rocks and things. So I think a lot of people say that Tarawa is runnable, which I agree with, but I also think you can't really dismiss the stuff on the floor and just being mindful of where you're stepping. And I think sometimes leaning into a little bit more of a heel strike can make you a little bit safer, because you're not then just hitting the floor with the front of your foot and then at more risk of tripping over. So there are a few times where I was like, oh, I really want to look around, or I really want to look at the lake or the trees or whatever's going on, but I don't want to fall over again, especially after that fall. Like, I was a bit put off for a while and a bit nervous, but I just found if I was able to land a little bit more on kind of the mid to the back of my foot, just for those moments where I could look up, then that could allow me to feel a little bit more confident that I wasn't going to trip. So anyway, that was a bit of a tangent. Where to next? So yeah, running along through there, that was cool. There was kind of a mixture of single track, a little bit of fire trail, bit of a mixture. To be honest, some of that stuff is a bit of a blur to me. There are some like significant moments that stand out that we'll talk about, but a lot of it kind of just blurs into one that I can't really recall too clearly. But then we went past this tree logging place. I'm not sure what the technical term is, but basically we just run through this amazing lush forest and I was looking at the trees and taking it all in. And then a few Ks later, we went past this place and they just had all these trees that were chopped up and just in massive logs. And they were just like driving them around and chopping them up. And it just felt like, I don't know if anyone else noticed, I haven't actually talked to anyone about this, but it just felt like this massive contrast of, I don't even know, it was a weird moment for me because I was just kind of confused and it just felt very conflicting, and it kind of just made me think about life in general and how contradicting everything is and how there's so much bad in the world. Like, I had this real moment of like, oh my gosh, like there's this incredible forest and they're just chopping it down and they're doing it right here in the forest. Like, it just felt a bit like, couldn't you guys do that somewhere else? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it was, I'm trying to think of an example, but basically you're in the most incredible place and then you just see it being destroyed while you're still in it. You know what I mean? Like, at least we could be out of it and see it somewhere. I don't know. It was quite confronting, and it just made me think a lot about the planet and the environment and society and capitalism and just all the bad things in the world. And I had this real moment of like, this is terrible. I can't believe they're doing this. And then I had to just kind of let that thought pass because I thought like, this is not productive right now. I'm not going to go and tell them to stop. I need to just continue my run and just we'll revisit that later. Anyway, so we carried on. First 20K, very runnable, really enjoyable, a little bit undulating or pretty flat. I think there were three kind of hills. I don't even know if I could call them big climbs, but there were definitely three moments where we were going up. And it was nice to see the people around me were hiking those hills, which was a bit of a relief because one of the things that Tim had said to me was kind of treat those early kilometers the same as you would later on. So if at 45 kilometers, there's a hill that you would hike, if you were to reach that same hill at 5 kilometers, approach it the same. So still hike it, even though you're fresh and you're feeling good, really trying to manage and conserve that energy. So I was making sure that those sections that I probably could have physically run, I chose to just cool it down a little bit and just hike those sections in order to save some energy for later on. So that was that. So we're moving through kind of 20Ks. We're getting towards that halfway mark. During this time, I've got a alert on my watch every 30 minutes going off telling me to eat some food. So I had a pretty clear nutrition strategy, and I haven't really been that specific with it in the past. In the past, I've sort of had like, you know, as long as I'm sipping Tailwind constantly, I'm getting a few things at the aid station, I'm having a couple of chews or blocks in between aid stations, then that'll be fine. But I had a bit of a panic the day before and just thought like, I think the thing that has let me down in the past in training runs and in long events is my nutrition, because I often will get to a point and just feel like I just have nothing left to give. Like, I'm just depleted completely. And I often just thought that was fitness and just thought, oh, I just haven't trained enough, I just haven't done enough long runs. But I think realistically, probably a lot of that is fueling and being underfueled and just running out of energy. So I had this panic the night before and I was Googling like how many carbohydrates should you have per hour, which I know is like 60 to 90 ideally. And I was calculating based on the gels that I had and the tailwind I had. And then I was thinking I didn't have enough tailwind. And then I was worried about electrolytes and I had these salt tablets and I was trying to calculate how many salt tablets I should have. And then I saw this thing saying you shouldn't have salt tablets. And it was just like all of this unnecessary noise that I just didn't need the night before an event. And I should have just prepared and planned for this late earlier. But I think the issue was my excuse is that I was just away for 3 weeks enjoying myself on a holiday. So I didn't have that time to just sit down and plan all that out. That's my excuse anyway. But basically, I just got a bit in my head about what I was going to eat and drink and how it was all going to work and all that kind of thing. So I had this very meticulous plan, which I never do. And I wasn't sure how it would go. But anyway, the 30-minute time went off the first time. And it was kind of nice because I didn't have kilometer splits on. I turned my kilometer split, like the alert that goes off, I turned that off ages ago and it's been so nice. I just got a bit irritated having it go off all the time and often just found it wasn't very helpful and I didn't really need to know. You know, maybe if I was in a 5k race or a 10k race or even a half marathon, it would probably be quite helpful to make sure I'm on track. But for ultras like or trail running, I just didn't care. It didn't matter. I didn't need to see, oh, your last kilometer was 10 minutes because you were going up a hill, or it was 5 minutes or whatever it is. Like, it just, I didn't want it. So I turned that off ages ago. And now in this one, I had the 30-minute timer on for the food. And it was really nice because suddenly, instead of having a timer go off or a kilometer split go off every 5, 6, 7 minutes, I just had one thing go off every 30 minutes. And it made it a little bit more digestible, which is ironic because I'm talking about food. But what I mean by that is the time flew by a little bit quicker and it was kind of like, oh, cool. If I can just break down how many of these 30 minute timers are going to go off. Like, that's a really nice way to look at it. So by the time 3 of the timers had gone off, I thought, okay, I've only probably got 9 more of these. Like, that's pretty cool. Once I do the next one, there's only 8 left and I'm going to be at halfway of these timers soon. And it was just a really nice way to break it down. I know a lot of people look at these kind of things as, you know, how many park runs do I have left? So I guess it's a similar concept. It's like, how many more lots of half an hour do I have left, or how many lots of half an hour have I already done? And I think that's makes a lot more sense for ultras than 1K or anything shorter than that. So that was really helpful. And I also stuck to it for quite a while. I definitely can say I did not eat on the half an hour every half an hour. But initially those first, at least first 4, I stuck to, I had the gels that I, or the chews that I needed to have. It reminded me to sip some of my tailwind as well, even though I was kind of doing that throughout. I will say there are a few times where, you know, I was really in a good rhythm, I was in a good flow, or I was going down a really technical, steep downhill section, and that's where I really like to maximize my time. I find that I'm relatively confident on the downhill, and I really enjoy the downhill. So I didn't want to have to try and fiddle around in my pack trying to get food out and then trying to eat that while I was also moving quite quickly. I tend to prefer, and I'd love to hear what you guys think about this, but I tend to prefer taking nutrition in while I'm going up a hill, because if I'm walking or jogging slowly up a hill, it feels like a good time to do that. It feels like I'll, you know, have time to take it in, and I'm, you know, my heart rate's probably a little bit lower if I'm going a bit slower. I can just, yeah, it feels more efficient that way. So there are a few times where I was in one of those moments where, okay, I'll come back to it soon. Like, I've heard the alarm, I will eat in a second. And then I kind of got a bit distracted, or maybe I just thought, oh, I'll just make it to the aid station because I've only got a few Ks to go, or things like that. So it definitely wasn't as meticulous as it sounds, but it was a really nice reminder. And yeah, just another thing to make me think about it, whether I stuck to it exactly or not, I don't think is as important. I mean, it probably is important. Probably that would be more optimal. But I think for me, it was just a nice extra reminder. So that was really helpful. So we've been through about 2 hours. I didn't really pay much attention. That was the other thing too. I just had the clock face on, so I didn't know how many kilometers I'd been through. And they also didn't have any signage in terms of kilometers until, there might've been some that I just didn't see. The first one I noticed was 6.6 Ks to go. That was the first time I had seen any signage. And the first time that I checked how far I was in this next moment, which was about 23 Ks. And at 23 Ks, I checked the distance because it was the first time that I felt something difficult. And I remember I was going down a downhill and then it got to a flat section. And I just suddenly felt like my legs were sore and I suddenly felt like they were heavy and all. It just felt like just within a second, I was just struggling. And I'd been flying. I'd been on such a high. I was just loving that first 20, like just absolutely having the best time ever. Which I think then makes the harder parts seem worse. I think if my baseline was just average and the run was just feeling okay and average and fine, then me having these lower moments probably wouldn't have seemed as significant. But in the moment, when I was just absolutely loving it and then suddenly felt this thing of like, oh, maybe I'm not loving it so much anymore, I think it felt quite dramatic and it felt like quite a contrast. But I don't think it really was. So got to about 23 and suddenly, yeah, I just felt the accumulation of the previous 20 Ks. And I think I got a little bit concerned because I thought, oh, if this is how my legs feel now, like I'm only just starting, I'm not even halfway yet. So I think I was just a bit concerned that maybe I'd gone a bit too fast in those first 20. Maybe I wasn't as prepared as I thought. Maybe I hadn't done as much training. It was just all those questions and all those doubts and all those thoughts just like flooding through. And I just had this moment and I think I walked for a few seconds, a minute maybe, and was just like, oh God, like I really want today to go well. And this is making me feel like it's not going to go well. And I need to snap out of this because this is just silly. Like I need to get over it. And I re-listened to Tim's advice and remembered he said, let me even try and bring it up. We talked about it in the episode, but basically something about these things are fun if we can accept that they're going to be difficult. So let me see if I can get that up for you. Yeah, that's basically what it says. So challenges, hard things, difficult things come up in ultras. Like I think when you're around it so much and when it's so normal to you, and for me when I work with clients who are doing these things and I talk to people about it on podcasts and I talk to all my friends about it and everyone around me or a lot of people around me are doing these crazy things. I think because it becomes so familiar, it then becomes so normal, and then you can kind of assume it's relatively easy because you're like, well, if all these people can do it, then it can't be that hard. Like, why would they all do it if it was that hard? So I think you can really easily fall into the trap of thinking that these things aren't going to be that hard. And I think we need to remember that 50 kilometers is a long way. 42 kilometers, like 10 kilometers is a long way. Depends completely on where you're at. But an ultra marathon in this context specifically is not normal. The majority of the population don't do it. It just happens that we are in this circle of people who do these things. So it makes us feel like it's really normal. So I had to really remind myself that this is meant to be hard. This is meant to be difficult. If I finish this thing going, that was easy, then I definitely didn't try hard enough. And obviously it depends on what you want out of it. You can go out and just enjoy the day and keep the effort really comfortable and just experience and explore, and that's totally fine. But for me, I wanted to test myself. I wanted to push myself. So if I'd finished this thing going, oh yeah, that was fine, that was easy, then I probably didn't really do what I set out to do. So I had a bit of a pep talk to myself, thought about the things that Tim had mentioned to me, and just kept going. So that 23K mark was about where we got to a lake. And basically it was just this little extra loop that was kind of added on. So there was an aid station there. And then the runners who had already done the loop, so they were in front of us, they were coming out, going past the aid station again, and then carrying on. So the loop was about 4Ks. When you finish it, you're at about 27. And we were going down a hill towards the lake. And there were these runners coming up who were already ahead. And I found it a bit challenging seeing them all so far ahead of me and thinking like, oh, they're already 4Ks ahead. Like I'm so far behind them. I've got to do this lake now and all that. Like I found that a little bit demoralizing, nothing too serious. I didn't feel defeated by it, but I just thought, oh, like I wish I was up there with them. You know, I wish I was ahead. I wish I didn't have to do this bit now. So I found that section wasn't my favorite. It was relatively flat. I found it a little bit dull. Like, we weren't in the forest anymore. We were near a lake, but I don't really remember seeing much of the lake. I think there were, you know, trees and bushes in the way. Anyway, it was fine. And then coming back around towards the aid station for the second time, I planned on getting some water, filling up one of my bottles, and I found it quite the opposite to when I was entering that aid station, because I could now see the other runners who were behind me about to do that loop, and I find that much more motivating. If I can feel how far ahead I am, I'm like, oh sweet, like I'm 4Ks ahead of them, like I don't have that far to go, I only have to do this little extra, whatever it was, 25Ks or whatever. I found that felt a little bit better. Anyway, so I got my bottle out, ready for the aid station. I was going to have this like quick F1 transition in and out. And then there was a big lineup for the water. So I just saw the line and didn't even, you know, check if there was anything else, any other options, or ask anyone or anything. I just sort of saw that and thought, okay, that's fine. I'm not going to stop. So I didn't get anything at that aid station and didn't fill up my bottle, which was fine because I still had some in my other bottle or my bladder, so I didn't need it, but I just thought if I get it now, then I won't have to get it later on. Anyway, carried on through there, kept going through. Nothing really significant happened between sort of 27 to 34. I was feeling all right, like pretty average, pretty typical to how I would feel at that point. Like, you're not quite there yet, but you've done a decent chunk of it, so you're tired enough to feel like you've done something, but you can't start getting excited for the end yet. So that was sort of how I felt. And then around 34, 35K, we got to Lake Taka. Let me check that I'm getting this right. Lake Tikatapu, which was where the 23K runners started. So this was a big highlight for me. And I'm typically someone who, I don't know where I sit on the spectrum of patience versus not patient. I'd like to think I'm a patient person, but I also like to be an efficient person, and I find it annoying when things get in the way of my efficiency, I guess. So maybe I'm not that patient, but basically we got to about 34 or 35 and then started getting through the back of the pack of the 23K runners, which was really nice. They were really friendly. They were really accommodating, and the section that we were in when we first joined them was relatively narrow. Like, you could maybe fit two people, some sections three people across, but it was real, like, pretty close to a single track. So they had to kind of move out of the way, or, you know, adjust what they were doing to let us pass. And they did that really considerately. And there was no egos in the way, no people trying to block the path or just not letting us around, or no one being disrespectful. So it was really nice. And it reminded me of how much I love the community, and it was just kind of fun to have fresh faces around and new people. And the ego part of me quite enjoyed the fact that we were passing them. And it's a funny thing to say out loud, but it is quite nice to pass people, whether you're competitive or not. I think there is something within us that just feels good. It feels productive. It feels like you're achieving something. And I think if I was in the 23K and getting passed by the 50K runners, I think that would have had the opposite effect on me. I think I would have felt quite frustrated. I would have probably felt a bit annoyed. I would have felt like I don't know. I just think, and I think this is why when I was at Melbourne doing the half marathon, I think this is part of the reason why I had such a good day, is because I was late. I started at the back, and then you've got this constant feeling of moving past people. And even if it's not about beating them or being better than them or having a higher place, but I think there is something subconsciously or physiologically about moving forward past something or someone, regardless of it just, I don't know what it is. It felt good. And I enjoyed the little comments from people, the little hellos, the little thank yous. Everyone was just really lovely and friendly, and that was awesome. So a few Ks of that, and then, or is this before? I'm getting a bit confused. There was an aid station at some point near here. Not exactly sure. Got to that aid station, had some watermelon, saw Zane, who is the videographer for a lot of these events. He was there, had a quick chat, and then carried on. And I remember saying to him, like, feeling so good, like 18Ks to go, whatever it was. Yeah, it was 18Ks, so whatever the maths is on that. And I was like, yeah, I'm pumped, like, I'm feeling awesome. That didn't last long, basically, spoiler alert. But anyway, it was really good. 34, 35Ks, massive high, felt so good. I felt better at 35 than I did at 25. And this was the best I'd felt this deep into an ultra marathon. I think kind of that 35 to 40K, I was smiling. Like, I was just so stoked. Until 40K, I was like, I feel so, I can't believe how good I'm doing. I can't believe how fit I am. Like, I am on top of the world. I've done the training and I'm doing the thing and it's working. And I'm, you know, normally at that point, I'm walking more than I should and I'm really struggling and I'm battling and I haven't eaten enough and I just all those things. But I was feeling fantastic. Then at 41K, we had a massive climb. Like, again, it's all relative. It depends what you're comparing things to. But in the scheme of things for Tarawera, this was, I think, the biggest climb, or it felt like it, the steepest anyway. I couldn't run up it. Like, just even if I physically could, as in my breathing and lungs and heart could handle it, the steepness was kind of impossible for that. So it was a steep hike up that hill. And then kind of a long downhill after that. So basically from that 41K, we were at, I guess, the highest point, and then we had to get back down to sea level. So there's a long decline down from there, which I loved. I just loved the downhill so much. So that was really fun. And then we'd had some warning about the smell at the end. There was a lot of talk about how gross the smell is at the end. So I was kind of bracing for that for a while. Once we started coming down the hill at about 42K, I started to notice the smell and I was like, oh, like, I can smell it, but it's not that bad. Like, that's fine. Like, I've smelt worse things. It wasn't that strong. I was like, this is fine. I'm so glad that it's not actually as bad as I thought it would be. And then we kind of kept working our way through, and about 45K, we were just kind of on a footpath, very exposed. By this point, it was about midday. It was really hot and the smell just increased. It was just so smelly. Like, I obviously was just getting a small sense of it earlier on, and then by 45 it was in its full force and we were running over the sulfur rock platforms or whatever they are, and you could see the steam coming up from them, and it was, I don't even know how to describe it, kind of like rotten eggs, I guess, or sewerage or any of those smells. So when you're exhausted, when it's hot, when you just want this thing to be over, like that was a real downer on things. And obviously it's part of the event, like that is just one of the things about it, and it's very memorable, and I'm sure that smell, if I ever smell it again, will remind me of that day. So, you know, it's not the worst thing, but it wasn't delightful. So I found this part really hard. From about 45K, I was ready for it to be done, and I thought, okay, 5K's left, like I can do that. But I also knew that it wasn't 5K's. I knew that, I think on the app on Capra, it said it was about 52. So I had that in the back of my mind the whole day. I kept tossing between 50 and 52. You know, when you're like from about 30K, I had my watch on distance and I kept checking it. And I think that was a bit of a mistake because I checked it probably way too often and was getting a bit frustrated. But I kept counting down my head like, oh, it's only 5. Oh, sorry, it's only 7. Or it's only this, but it's actually this. And I had both numbers in my head and I was secretly hoping that the distance was actually shorter, because I remember checking a few people's Strava who'd done it the year before to kind of look at the elevation and see if they'd written anything in the comments that would be useful. And their distances were all much shorter. They were 50 point something. So I just thought, oh, the distance is probably overestimated. They probably said that just in case. And maybe it's, you know, if you do the widest part of the path and whatever. So I was like, no, it'll be fine. It'll probably just be 50. And then there was someone near me who asked some bystanders how long to go, and they said 4Ks, and at this point we were at 46, and I was like, oh, perfect, I knew it was just gonna be 50, that's great. And they were so confident that it was 4, and she was like, perfect, I'll let my family know. So she's texting her family, get ready guys, 4Ks away. And then we go into the Redwoods, which is the final aid station. You just kind of go in and out of this section, and then leaving that aid station, it said 6.6Ks to go, and I started crying. I think the whole day was a bit emotional, particularly that start moment. And then again here, like I wasn't completely sobbing and just like so sad, but it was just like, it was partly pride and excitement and like, oh, like I've nearly done it. Like this is the moment. It's nearly here. And then it was also feeling a bit defeated of thinking like, I don't want to do 6.6. I want to do 4 or even 5. I'd accept 5. So it was a little bit heartbreaking. And then that next 6.6 just went on and on and on. And it was flat, which was great, I guess, but it wasn't really. Like, I think I would have rathered a bit of undulation, a few hills to keep it interesting, and at least then enjoy some downhills. And you know, then you can walk up the uphills and that's fine. But to have this flat, and I was just jogging along, and I was quite proud of myself for jogging. Like for 90% of that last 5 or 6 Ks, I wasn't walking. My pace might suggest otherwise because I was jogging very, very slowly. But I really wanted to make an effort to make sure I tried to jog as much of that as possible because I knew I physically could. I knew that it was flat. I knew that I was nearly there. There was nothing apart from my mind from stopping me. But there were a few moments where I was like, oh, screw this. Like, I'm just going to walk for a bit. And particularly what happened was I, in my head, had this goal of sub 6 hours. And I was approaching 50 kilometers and I was going to be under 6 hours. And I was so excited and so happy, but also really devastated that I knew I just was going to miss the 6 hours for the whole event. And in my head, if it was 52 Ks and I ran at a 6 minute pace, I could have done it at a certain point. Like I'd sort of calculated the numbers and I could have done it. And then I got to 50 and thought, I can't. And I know it's not going to be that distance anyway. So I know I'm going to be over. So unfortunately, and I hate saying this, I sort of gave up a little bit at that point because I got to 50 Ks in, I think it was about 5 hours 51. And I was so happy with that. Like, that is a massive achievement for me. It's not a PB for that distance, but it is for a trail run, I guess. And I think, yeah, relatively, like, that is a really, really good run for me. And knowing that I had 3.5 Ks to go, I just thought, well, like, 3.5 Ks would normally take me more than 15 minutes if I was, you know, running well and fresh. So it's going to take me more than that now. So basically, that last 3 Ks ended up, 3.5 Ks took me half an hour. And I was jogging most of that. So that just shows you how, what my pace was for my jogging effort then. Anyway, we kept going along. It was pretty dull, pretty boring, very hot by this point. And then this volunteer was so excited and so nice and going, only 1 K to go. And honestly, like, I was just so sad to hear that. 1 K just felt like forever. And then after he said that, we just had this grass section, which like thick, long grass was just not what I wanted. It just felt like you're on sand. So that was a little bit upsetting. This whole part was a bit upsetting. There were a lot of tears. And then there were camera people, and I was trying to smile through the tears. And I was also trying not to cry because I didn't want people to ask me what's going on or check if I was okay or check if I was hurt. Like, I just didn't want anyone to know. But I was like, you know, when you're breathing hard. So I was kind of like making those like weird, like inhale, shaky sound, like just not great. No, I was not in my prime anymore. Anyway, I could see the finishing chute. Someone said 300 meters to go. That was exciting. Went through the finishing chute, saw a few people cross the line, and then laid down in the finisher's tent for a while. Zach was at the finish line because he'd finished his 23K, and yeah, just laid around in there for a while. I've had a few more tears when I saw him, and then I was pretty good after about sort of 10 or 15 minutes. Had a bit of food, had a bit of water, and that was the event done. And yeah, it's an interesting one. I still, as I said in Tim's episode, I still don't quite know how I feel about it. I think reflecting on that now, I feel quite proud and feel, I think overall, I did really well, and I'm really proud of what I did for 50K. I'm not so proud about my last 3.5, but at the time, I just physically felt like I couldn't do any more. Like, I just felt like I was at my limit, and you can only do what you can with what you've got. So that's what I did with what I had. And I think it's quite a big step for me. I think all of my, it's the only 50K that's gone well. It's the only 50K that I haven't ended up injured or I haven't been injured during. It's the only 50K that I've felt that strong, and I've been running at 40, 45K at, you know, like a 6 minute pace at that point. So I feel like it's a big step, and I feel like my next 50, whenever that will be, if that will ever be, will be even better again. And I'm really proud with it. And I, as I said in Tim's episode, like, it's a funny one because I don't really care about it, which is just such a weird statement. And again, probably such a contradiction because I've just spent an hour talking to you about it, and I spent months talking to you about it prior, and I've spent months training for it. But it just isn't make or break for me. It just isn't important enough to rule my life. And I'm really happy with that. Like, I really enjoyed the training. I'm also like really excited to get back into training. I don't feel like I need a break, or I don't feel unmotivated or anything like that. Like, I'm just like, yeah, let's just continue on, which is really nice. So I'm so happy I did it. It was an incredible trip. Like, the trip itself, and I love doing that, like having a run attached to a holiday or going somewhere new and doing a run. Like, I think that's an awesome way to do things, and I really love that. There were so many people there that did so well, and it was so fun watching them and cheering for them and seeing them come through the 100K, 100 milers, the winning female of the 100 mile, watching that finish was just incredible. And the Maori performance after that, and the whole day and the whole event and everything to do with that was just incredible, like amazing. But the result itself, like, it's fine. It's good, I think. I mean, I don't really know. My final time, if anyone's wondering, was like 6:19:59 or something like that. So just under 6:20. If I was to go again, I'd love to break six. Will I go again? Probably not, because there's so many things to do, you know? Like, maybe I'll go back there for 100K one day, or, you know, if someone else wanted to go and asked me to go with them, like, I'd probably go just for the fun. But there are so many other things to do, and just an endless list of places to run. So we will see what's next. But yeah, in summary, like, don't let your results define you. No one really cares. I don't think anyone, maybe one or two people asked me what my time was or what my result was. But for something like this, people are just stoked that you finished. Or if you didn't finish, you got a DNF, they're proud of what you achieved until that DNF, and they're proud that you made that decision. You know, like, I don't think there's no losers. There's no bad result. There's no bad finish. And obviously some people have high expectations, and if they meet them, that's great. And if they don't, that's hard. But yeah, I think for something like this, it's just about experiencing life. There are just so many ups and downs and highs and lows, and it's such a roller coaster. And just knowing that those hard things come, but they're often followed by good moments. Like that 23 to 25, 27K mark, where I was really just down the dumps, not feeling it. If I knew that 35K would come when I was running with those 22K runners and just having the best time, like, that is just, you know, knowing that that will happen is really powerful. And just knowing that once it gets bad, it doesn't stay bad, I think is a really cool lesson from that. So yeah, that is the summary of the event. Now, what happened next? Recovery wise, that night I didn't sleep much as usual. Like, I usually don't really sleep well the night after an ultra. Mostly just kind of like, I feel a bit uncomfortable and sore and can't get comfortable in bed. We were also in the van that we'd hired, so that bed obviously isn't super comfy, but I don't think it would have really made a difference. I just felt like I couldn't really get into a comfortable position, but that's to be expected. The next day was pretty stiff and sore, like, waking up first thing in the morning, just, you know, my quads felt pretty tight, my calves a little bit, my traps, often I feel my traps are really sore just from carrying the pack around, I guess, or maybe it's to do with my posture as well. Yeah, nothing stood out as any really red flags, just general tightness and stiffness. I do still have that funny foot thing that I need to go to see Tom DeCanto about, but he's away at the moment, so I can't get in there till like for the next 2 weeks. But basically, my weird foot thing has just been going on this whole time. It was there the whole time I was away, I think because I was walking a lot, and then it definitely flared up after the run. I think it's a plantar plate irritation, but it's just weird. Like, anyway, I'm not going to go into details about it now, but that's kind of still the same. It didn't get any worse, didn't get any better. That would be strange if it did get better. And then the only other thing I did notice was about 5Ks to go, I suddenly had a really sharp pain in my right shin. Like, it felt like someone stabbed me in the shin, and that feeling didn't really go away. And anytime I sort of, like after the race, when I tried to dorsiflex, so bring my toes up towards my shin, it was like, oh wow, like strong, intense pain. The next day, like both shins and calves just felt like generally tight, and my shin felt relatively tender to touch. Like, I was kind of poking around and prodding around, and it felt a bit more tender than the left side, but it felt a little bit more like my tib ant, which is the muscle that runs alongside the front of your shin, rather than anything bony, because I was kind of like, oh, my shin, I don't want a tibial stress fracture after listening to Bo's episode. Not ideal. Anyway, so that feels fine now. It's now just over a week later. So it's now Monday the 26th. The race was on Saturday the 17th. I was probably sore for about 2 days, like properly sore. And then I got sick. So I think that was probably a blessing in disguise, because I think after I started feeling good by about the Tuesday, I would have been really tempted to go for a run. But then I got sick, which I think is a combination of the post-run immune system suppression, which I think I've spoken about in a previous episode. Basically, when you do something at a really high intensity for a long time, your body goes into a bit of fight or flight and tries to go into survival mode and just make sure that you get through whatever you need to get through, and your immune system and some other bodily systems take the backseat. So then after that, and then hopping on a plane, I think that was a combination of things. So basically just had a cold, nothing too dramatic. But it just meant that I couldn't really run, or felt like that would be silly, like recovering from a 50 and sick, like surely just listen to your body and have a rest. So that was good. I had to do Pace Run Club because I lead that run on a Thursday, which I think I wouldn't have done if I didn't need to. Like I could have not gone, of course, but I wanted to see everyone and wanted to be a part of it. So I did that and felt totally fine. Like wasn't sick by then. Felt completely back to normal and didn't notice my legs at all. But I think during that run, I don't think that's a really full indication, because I'm often very distracted. I'm making sure no one gets lost. I'm taking photos. Like I'm not really thinking about my own body or my own run in that situation. So that was really fun, good distraction, felt fine, but didn't really notice anything. Then took Friday off and then, went to the gym on Friday, which was a shock to the system. I'd kind of forgotten, because I'd been running for the whole time that I was away, and then obviously the race, I'd sort of forgotten that I'd had basically a whole month off from the gym, no strength training during that whole time. So my first session back, we were doing deadlifts, or sumo deadlifts, which I don't often do, but anyway, we were doing 5 rounds, 10 reps, and I just put 65 kilos on the bar because that's a pretty comfortable weight for me for 10 reps for deadlifts. Like I just didn't really think about it. And then I was doing those first 10 and got to sort of 6 or 7. I was like, oh, like, yeah, this is hard. I haven't done this for a while. And you do lose strength pretty quickly. So anyway, I kept the weight on and finished those reps, finished the sets, but I was pretty sore the next day. My hamstrings, my kind of spinal erectors on my back and my adductors were a bit sore and tight. So Saturday, the next day, I went to North Shore Run Club to catch up with some people, and I was having a great time. I was having really good conversations with a few people. Did the first 5Ks, and then we got over the bridge and I just felt like I needed to pull the pace back a little bit. I felt like I was going too fast, but I looked at my watch and I wasn't. Like, we were doing kind of 6-ish minute pace, which is usually kind of comfortable for me. Anyway, I pulled back a little bit just to see what was going on, tried to just walk a little bit. And I just felt like it was a similar feeling to as if I was racing a 5K. Like, my heart rate felt like it was racing. I felt like I was going to vomit. My legs felt like they were going to give way. Like, all those feelings of, like, you've just really pushed yourself in a short distance event. That's what I felt like. But I was jogging a 6:30 minute K, chatting to people. Like, it was really weird. So I ended up just pulling up short and getting the train home. And then I was looking at my data from the run afterwards, and my heart rate was 180 to 190 for that whole second half of the run, which is exactly how it felt. So I think I just hadn't recovered fully from the sickness, and then combination of, you know, still recovering from the event plus my legs being sore from the gym, like, yeah, it just all wasn't quite ready. So that was a bit of a shame. Took Sunday off, just had a walk and a really chill day on Sunday, and then this morning, Monday, did a 45 minute jog with Zach and felt pretty good. Like, didn't feel like I had heaps of energy, didn't feel like I was ready to race, but got through the 45 minutes pretty comfortably. Definitely noticed the humidity and definitely noticed the hills, which I didn't have any of while I was in Japan, so that wasn't super fun. But yeah, generally felt pretty good. So the big question, what's next? Am I doing another ultra? Am I going to do 100K? Am I doing another 50? What's happening? Drum roll, please, everybody at home. I have officially signed up for an event. It is less than six weeks away, and it is the Canberra Half Marathon. Gosh, shock, horror, who would have thought it? I'm doing a half marathon on the road in 6 weeks. Now, would I advise that of someone in my position? Probably not. I mean, you could do a half marathon in 6 weeks, that's fine, but I want to get a PB. So I'm putting it out there to the universe, putting it out to you guys to keep me accountable, making sure that I'm saying this out loud so that it happens. I'm going to break 1 hour 45 in the half marathon. I haven't done it before. I feel like I'm more than capable of doing it with the right preparation, and I feel as though I've got a really good solid foundation, solid base now. I've got the aerobic training in. I just need to get some speed. So this next 6 weeks is project speed. I'm going to do some intervals tomorrow. I'm just deciding whether I go with a group tomorrow that are really fast or I go by myself. The pros with going with the group are obviously running with a group is so much fun, and I am a big advocate for running with a group. So many benefits. They are also very fast, so it will push me. It's also very close to home, convenient, the timing works, all that stuff. The only real negatives are I'm not sure how I'll go based on how I've been feeling the last week. I know that I'm going to be quite slow, so will I just end up getting lapped and not actually be able to make the most of the group setting? Like, if you're going to run with a group, I feel like it's helpful to be able to actually run with the group. Yeah, I'll either do that or just do my own speed session just to kind of figure out where I'm at, make sure I'm kind of fully recovered, and see what sort of speed we have to work with over the next 6 weeks. I have written up a bit of my own program, so I'm going to have a break from Tim just temporarily while I can just kind of do my own thing, be a bit more spontaneous, work on this kind of random speed goal, and then I'm going to go back to Tim afterwards once I've kind of locked in a race later on in the year, which I've got a few ideas, and I think it probably will be an ultra. I think another 50k might be on the cards because I felt like that distance was good. I would like to do some shorter stuff in the meantime, but yeah, potentially later on in the year we'll do something longer. So I've got 6 weeks to get fast, 6 weeks to get the legs working again. Need to remember how to do more than just a jog, which will be interesting. It's probably going to be quite confronting. I'm a bit nervous about these speed sessions that I'm hopefully going to join, but that's just part of it. And if I can't show up to a new run club and suck it up and run with people who are better than me, then I'm not being a very good advocate for the things that I stand for. So do the things you say you're going to do. And what's the other phrase? There's another good quote along those lines. Basically just, I'm going to do the things, you know, do the things that are needed and push myself out of my comfort zone in a different way this time. So it won't be about distance. It's just going to be purely about building up some speed. So yes, that's the plan. It's out in the universe now. You all know about it. By the time you're listening to this, it'll be 5 weeks to go. So it's a quick turnaround. There's not a heap of time. It's optimistic, but when I did Melbourne Half Marathon, not last October, the one before, I did about 1:45 and a half or something like that. And that was meant to be just a training run at that time. And I also didn't have a really nice run of training that I've just had, you know, I've just had a really solid 3 or 4 months plus. Like, there was also the marathon training block before this. So yeah, if I'm going to do it, I feel like, yeah, I may as well make the most of the fitness that I've got and just build from there. So that is the plan. I will keep you up to date with how I go each week, do a couple of little check-ins along the way. And yeah, if anyone's going to Canberra, would love to meet up, go for a run, a little shakeout jog or a little warm-up jog before the run, and hopefully see you out there. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for all your support as well in the lead up to Tarawera and following Tarawera. I had some really nice messages and comments, and that's, yeah, just really nice to hear that you are all supportive and happy for me. And yeah, I really appreciate every single one of you. So thank you so much for listening. We've got some cool episodes coming up in the next few weeks. We've got a couple of American guests coming up and an Aussie guy as well that we've booked in. So we've kind of booked in the next three. And then I'm sure there'll be plenty more of exciting ones coming up soon. So thank you so much for listening. Check out our discount codes below. It'll help support us, support the dream, and you'll also get some cheaper nutrition, some shoes, some sunscreen, all the things that you need to keep on running. Thank you so much, team. Speak to you next week.